So during this season of Lent, we have been working our way through the Gospel of John and looking at the signs of life, the revelation of the abundant life that God is offering to us, as seen through the particular lens of the miracles that happen. Miracles are amazing things. It bends reality, but it also kind of points to something. In fact, as we've been working our way through, we've talked about how each one of these miracles kind of follows a predictable pattern, at least in the way that they're told. There's a context for what happens. There is the need that is presented into the moment. There is Jesus's miraculous response, the reality-bending response of Jesus. It oftentimes goes over and above what seems to be needed in the midst of all that. And then there's the disciples' reaction, how people kind of make sense of what all that, and what happens and all that. And all of that reflects life, this different life that God is inviting us to, is hoping that we will pick up and bring into ourselves. So this week we are in a boat, and it's cold and wet. For my birthday, I had a birthday last week, and my wife said, "Let's go." And sometimes she will gift me with an escape. So on Friday and Saturday, we were in Cape May, New Jersey. It's a lovely place. I see some thumbs up and some faces smiling. So we were there. And on Friday morning, I went for a walk on the beach and recorded the sunrise and took photographs and that sort of thing. It was great. Nice, calm water, beautiful, kind of just great. It wasn't like exactly, balmy and sweaty kind of like beach weather, but I have a decent tolerance for the beach at 33 degrees, a decent tolerance of that. And so had a nice walk, it was all great. So Gina kind of slept in, and we had a chance to spend some time together, and we decided to go back to the beach later on. And so when we went back to the beach later that day, it was maybe about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And all that wind that you had been kind of going through over these last couple of days made its way to us. And it was on the beach too. So it was like 30 mile an hour winds with some interesting gust. And the kind of winds that, blow sand like right into your eye, it was a good time. It maybe was one of the most romantic moments that I have spent. No, it was, because what you had to do is you had to hunker down. You had to get kind of like in between some of the dunes just to kind of like have them serve as a windbreak so that you wouldn't die, or freeze to death. So we had just this lovely moment, and I was thinking about those disciples who were in water during a storm. So I was thinking about you a little bit. I was working, I was multitasking in the moment, because there they are in the boat, and maybe not just like mildly uncomfortable like we were, although we were hunkered down for the 10 minutes that we made it, We see disciples who are in that boat for hours, and they're struggling. Now, let's think about this. This is right after the last miracle. Remember last week we talked about how Jesus fed at least 5,000 people. And he, is in this kind of amazing moment where he is teaching about who he is and who God is and who the people are. And so at the end of that day, they kind of like collect all those baskets. They want to like start moving on. And Jesus says, "I'm going to go take a break. This is good. I'm going to step aside for a bit, and I'll see you on the other side." So he sends those disciples out into the water. They get in the boat. They start heading across the way. Now, obviously, the wind is not at their back, right? Because it says they have to row about 3 or 4 miles. Any rowers in here? Any lovers of rowing in here? Right. So, and I'm not much of a rower, too. The most kind of exerted rowing I ever did was in a canoe with a daughter in the bow and a daughter in the back, you know, one on each side of me. I'm in the middle, and about halfway across a lake, pretty sizable lake, I realized that I should have looked down into the canoe before I pushed off, because the water level was rising rapidly in the midst of that. It was approaching my ankles. And I realized that there was a crack that I did not look to see. There was a crack in the middle of the canoe, and I had a daughter in front and a daughter in the back, and I don't swim, okay? They swim, thankfully, but I don't. So I was motivated. you know that feeling. It's like, okay, got to do something about this. And so I'm motivated to kind of get those girls. And I didn't want to freak them out, so I didn't say anything to them about what was going on, about our near-death experience. But, you know, there we are, until the one in the back said, "Dad, look at you," you know, and it was a moment. And we made our way through. We made our way through. But boy, I was beat by the time we got to the other side. So these disciples are struggling for miles. Even though there's multiple ones in the boat, they are having to work hard. And also, this is not a time where the Coast Guard is handy, and there are no flare guns in the bow, right? So you have a significant risk of being lost. Thankfully, there were fishermen in there who sort of knew the deal. But still, there's a real moment of fear, a real moment of absolute, what are we going to do? This is coming right off of the miracle of being fed. Say something about this journey. Even though there are times that are going to happen that we will find ourselves gifted, there's still going to be trouble. And in fact, it immediately comes in this moment. And they are working hard. They're working their best. Two things happen here. One is Jesus has to get across to meet them. Now, he is clearly, you know, Jesus. He's part of the Trinity. He is part of the very creation of all of reality. And as such, can bend that. We have seen that happen in these miracles. But he is, he has a place to be. And it's quite possible, if you just kind of like work with this as a mind experiment, you know, he could have done any number of things just to kind of make it. He could have flown. He could have, you know, bent reality in any way he chose to. What does he do? He goes walking for those miles. Can you imagine walking 3 or 4 miles on water? You know, I get grumpy when I step in a puddle. But he goes, he chooses to walk. He chooses to invest in that walk for those miles to those disciples, to those followers and friends of his. He comes to them. He doesn't, you know, do the most efficient, doesn't do kind of like, oh, well, I'll see him on the other side. Hope I'll see him on the other side. No, he goes to us and goes to us in the middle of the storm, in the middle of the turmoil. Not on the other side of it, but right into it. You just said that a few moments ago in the call to worship. Remember that? He comes to us in the storm. Now, we certainly know about storms. We know about it at a personal level, and we are experiencing a lot in the, you know, just the kind of natural world with the weather, but also our political and our social world is just torn. So storms are exactly the kind of place that we are in, and naturally they bring about fear. I worry about what is happening in our world. I know many of you are as well, partly because of the unpredictability of this. We've seen things, but we know things, and we don't know from moment to moment even. And this is a really ripe moment for fear to say, you're in a terrible place. This is going to be bad. And every possible scenario of just how bad it can be gets played in our hearts and our minds and even in our realities. We start reacting to that. People hoard in the midst of these kind of moments. I bet you there's some place where somebody has a lot of toilet paper in their basement right now. We laugh, but you remember, right? This is hard. And I wish I could say, it'll all be okay. But our life is filled with complications. Miracles do occur. Miracles happen all the time. That we're gathered here is an absolute miracle. Did you think that you would come back from COVID? Right? Actually, the way that the church is, I mean, the church is such a complicated thing. It's such a hard thing, and sometimes we make mistakes with each other. We do terrible things to each other sometimes. And still, this is the way in which God chooses to make God's presence manifest, Jesus' body manifest into this world right now. You are a miracle, and you're participants in miracles that are happening in this space and around the world through your connection. So miracles happen. And we have to hold to the one who started all of reality, who comes and says, and this is the first thing, it's like, he says, Jesus, he says, I am. Now, he says a version of, it is I, when they are freaking out and they see him. And some versions of this story, they look at him and they think, that's a ghost on the water, right? But in this particular case, he says, this is God. He uses the same kind of framing of words that are used when the bush is burning in front of Moses. And Moses is trying to figure out who is it that is in that I am in the presence of. And God reveals God's self as I am. Who do I say he sent me? I am. It's a way of saying, I am all being. I am the very nature of being. I am God. So Jesus is working his way to those boys in the middle of the storm, in the middle of the brokenness, and shows up to them and says, the very presence of God is here with you. In the middle of the storm. And by the way, that same very presence of God is with us. And I would argue with the world. In the middle of this storm in ways that we might not even be able to fully imagine. He says, don't worry, be happy. Is that what he says? I thought it, no, that's not it. He says, don't fear. Don't allow that fear to overwhelm you, even in the midst of this. They're like, cool, get in a boat with us. I like that. That's the right answer, by the way. When you're approached by the very presence of the living God, you want him in your boat, right? He makes his way to them, reveals himself as the fullness of God, but also the fullness of, and I love you enough to walk out to you in the midst of this storm. Doesn't that say a lot? Now, we are using a book. It's the book called Seven Miracles That Point to Life. I believe I got the title right. Don't tell my wife I messed up her title. Oh my gosh. That would be a miracle that I survived that. And the book that we are using is great. It's really helpful. If you have bought it, that's wonderful. You don't have to have it to be part of this series. But the story, the chapter, and it's written by another writer, a friend of mine, a lovely person, she ends the story where we just ended the story, right at the moment where they want him to get in the boat, and then suddenly they have made it. Isn't that an interesting detail? Suddenly they are right there at their destination where they needed to be. Fascinating detail. Wish we had time to kind of deal with that. But what I want to argue and encourage you to do is not stop there. So if you go back and you look at the sixth chapter of John, what you will see is that the moment that they get to the other side begins a dialogue. And it's a tough one. And it's actually the root of our homework now, which is this. Jesus, who has identified himself as God, it's God's presence, part of the Trinity, who is right there. Jesus begins a conversation with the people about the nature of how he would like for them to live and understand. And he will go through that and build off some of the ideas that are in there later when he's starting to talk about, I am the Good Shepherd. I am the bread of life. I am. And he will invite them to be part of something much bigger than whatever miracle, whatever sign can be shown in the midst of that, because there is life to live. And there is a life in following Jesus for them to live into. And doggone it, if some people don't go, that's too much. Having been fed, having been, you know, encountered in the midst of the storm, some of those disciples and some of the other people who are like wanting to be disciples are saying, I can't go as far as you're asking me to go. Having encountered those things, having experienced the very power of God, at what point does our boundaries fail us? And we say, oh, that's a little too much. Because that's exactly what happened. For some, they're like, I can't do this. You're asking too much. So Jesus turns to his disciples and he says, well, that core, those ones he called, those ones that have been closest in, the ones that were remaining after the others kind of scatter and saying, this has been a great weekend. Thank you so much. Cool. Jesus turns to the rest of them and says, and for you, what are you doing? And one stands up and says, where would we go? So we have points of decision to make about how we handle the moment that is in front of us. Do we give in to the fear Do we allow that fear to drive us into places that are hurtful for ourselves and for other people around us? Do we hold on through the storm? Do we encounter on the other side of that a conversation that seems to push us beyond what we want to take or can take? Or do we keep going? That will be the homework. That will be what you will be confronted with in the next steps. Choose well. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.